generation one, but what about you? Just introduce your family to us a little bit about the Logan heritage and something about Lois and her family as well. Just introduce us to your family, please.
Well, the Lord has been very good to me. We meet parents who went to serve the Lord in Zambia, Africa. In 1923, they went out from Buffalo, New York. Hearing the testimony of our brother Reese reminds me of my father's testimony. He's the first one saved, and he said his first mission station, a field, was his own family, and he had the joy of leading them all to the Lord. And they went to Africa, and they both passed away out there. Lois's family was, they were serving the Lord in Pakistan. She was actually born in India at Mr. and Mrs. Gordon Williamson. He was commended from an assembly in London, and his wife, Eileen Lindsay, was commended from Bethany in Brooklyn. And they met on the field, and they had four daughters, and one of their daughters is my wife, Lois.
And how about your family? You have how many daughters and one son, huh?
Three daughters, last count. And Samuel, he came along at the end.
And what is Samuel doing now?
He's going to Laterno University in Texas.
Oh, well, let's get back to recent happenings in Africa. Just tell us, you had been down in South Africa, and you and Lois came back up to Shivuma and Zambia, and then you went out to visit a village, and then events began to happen. Just tell us a little bit about those early times.
Well, the months of, we call them the hot season months in Zambia, September, October, and November, we're usually out in the villages, and the Lord has really been good to us, and going out with some of the Zambian brethren, and the Lord has seen fit to start a number of new assemblies just in the matter of a few months. So we were out in the villages with my wife. It was the first part of December, and before that we used to go only in the dry season, but the Lord has now given us equipment to go out in the wet season, but it's also mosquito season. And the way it developed was, my wife was doing some work with AIDS patients at Shivuma Mission Hospital. It's, as in other parts of Africa, there's a tremendous number, epidemic proportions, the AIDS patients. So Lois was involved in telling the patients that they had AIDS. First stage was shock, then after that, following it up with, although you have a bad disease, I have a good news. Christ is the answer, and then presents the gospel to them. So as a result of this, one of these ladies that trusted the Lord, she had led some of her sisters to Christ. So we were out in this remote part of Zambia near the Angola border at the beginning of December when she came down with malaria.
And she came back to Shivuma and went to see Dr. Harrison, and what were those events that day?
Well, when she came down with malaria, she had rigors or extreme shivering, and she said, the tent had blown down, and I didn't, she said, I don't care if it blows down on me, I just feel so miserable. So I knew we had to head back. We got back to Shivuma the next day. We had to spend the day at the Zambezi River. I think of the ambulances and 911 programs, but here we're stranded just waiting on the Lord, but he had it all under control, and Dr. Willie Harrison immediately had a blood slide take, and then she was double positive malaria result.
Then she was quite ill right there at Shivuma, and some of the nurses took her into their home to watch her, did they not?
That's right. It was Wednesday when we returned, and Friday afternoon, Marion and Nora, who you were praying for when I had my previous neurosurgery 9 years ago, they're taken by UNITAS insurgents in Angola. They're now working with us in Shivuma, and they took Lois up to their home. It's interesting how God worked in that, because had she stayed there, very likely I would have woken up in the morning on my heavy sleeper and found her unconscious or even dead. But God just guided, and Marion and Nora taking her up to the home, and she hadn't eaten very much. She's throwing up everything she could eat. But eventually, he was put on an IV, and it was about 1:30 she went unconscious. The details of that are really interesting, but I won't go into that right now. But God spared Lois's life through a decision made by Nora Draper, which was very significant in her life being saved, because the IV had come out and she was figuring to change her IV later on, 40 minutes later. But when she came back, the fact that she changed it, was going to change it then, before the 40 minutes were up, she found Lois unconscious. So it is at that time we realized that the emergency was on our hands.
You mentioned the 911. If that happened in this country, somebody would have called 911 and all the neighbors would have heard sirens and everything else. But out there, what happened? What did Jeff Spiesinger do?
Well, Jeff, just before Jeff Spiesinger went down to Zambezi, which is 52 miles away, our nearest telephone, we're very thrilled. We now have a telephone 52 miles away instead of 600 miles away. Jeff went down to phone South Africa to get an emergency plane. We don't have missionary aviation in Zambia. And one of the co-workers we lost at Chibuma, Father's co-workers, Mr. Moat, died because there was no plane service. So Jeff went down to make the contact with South Africa. And as it's interesting, at that time, my sister and brother-in-law, David and Grace Crowder, had come back from a remote part of Zambia in the villages a day early. God was in this because they were there to help out with the emergency, getting the phone calls from their home. And they were able to make contact with the plane service 1,800 miles away in South Africa.
What did the plane service do? Who did they send up, or what kind of equipment came up to get Lois?
It was a twin jet Cessna with a pilot, a doctor, and two nurses. Very small. As you sat on the plane, you kind of leaned over, but it certainly cruises at a fast speed. And they came up with all emergency equipment right on the plane.
And back at Chibuma, what was going on? Wasn't someone going around knocking on the doors?
Well, when the doctor came down at 2:20 to wake me up to say, "Paul Lois is unconscious," I could hardly take it in. It seemed as though it was a dream. And he said, "It doesn't look very good." When I got up to Mary and Nora's house, Lois was in a coma. And I held her hand. And I didn't think she was going to make it. I committed her to the Lord. And Willie said, "Shall I call your sister Viola Young?" I said, "That'd be lovely." So we prayed together and committed Lois's life to the Lord. I can't speak too highly of our fellow workers who rallied together in so many ways to save Lois's life. If it had not been for them, it would have ended with a grave. At Chibuma in Zambia. But God was better than our fears. They rallied together, different ones. Willie said it might be good, Paul, to be prepared to fly to the States. So that put a lot of extra pressure upon us to get everything done. Viola and her two daughters had stayed at Chibuma because when her husband, Bob Young, had gone over, Jeanette Young was down with a fever, but God was in that because the three of them were able to help me pack with emergency needs. And then Alice White said, "How about someone staying on the radio every minute so we can make contact with the one phoning at Zambezi?" All these little details, you just see God's hand in it.
They went around and woke up a lot of the local Christians and had them gather for prayer too, did they not?
Right.
And what happened in the early days of South Africa when you're down there and Lois was in this coma and the children were here at home? What were your thoughts then? I sound like one of those TV people that I hate. But tell me anyway.
Well, when we were able to contact the plane. They wanted a guarantee of payment for the $9,000 in the early hours of the morning, Saturday morning. How do you work this out? But the Lord worked that out with a guarantee from overseas, and the plane arrived, and although she went unconscious at 1:30 Saturday morning, December the 12th, we arrived in Johannesburg after the sunset, just after 6. An ambulance was there and rushed Lois to the intensive care unit in Johannesburg. When we arrived, the doctor or a physician who was taking care of her said, "Mr. Logan, I'm sure you're aware of cerebral malaria." I didn't know how cerebral malaria differed from regular malaria, but Dr. Harrison said, "Well, when a patient goes unconscious, you know that it's affected the brain, and normally it's just a fever and shivers." So I learned something from the experience. But anyway, he said, "Mr. Logan," he said, "I'm sure you're aware of cerebral malaria, the seriousness. There's a high chance of mortality and also brain damage." So that was the news that met us the first night in South Africa.
And yet, there were some folks from the States that were visiting over there, and they went to visit you while you were with Lois, and they wrote back and said that Paul was out as usual. What were you doing while she was laying in the bed? What were you doing with the other people?
Well, I don't know if I was at my usual there, because I was at a rather low point, seeing your wife in intensive care in a coma for 5 days. I was kind of low, and to a phone call from here in New Jersey, calling a sister visiting Marion Turner from Kearney, that see if you can visit Paul and his wife in the hospital. So she came over with her son Bob, and they were just like angels sent from God, because I just needed that. But while I was there, one of the things that spoke to me, I was just impressed how God worked out the details. When I went from the intensive care, where Lois wasn't responding, unconscious state, I went to the intensive care waiting room, just for a little exercise, variation of body position. And as I walked in, I saw mother and her daughter hugging one another and in tears. And I said, "Lord, I don't know what these hurts are there, but help me reach out to them." And after a while, I saw them reading the scriptures together. They were Jewish. And I said, "You have loved ones in intensive care?" And amidst their tears, they said, "Yes." And they gave the details. Well, I said, "My wife's been there in a coma. She's going down from Zambia. I'm just so encouraged to see you reading the scriptures." "Oh," she said, "we enjoy them." I said, "Well, at times like this, this is where we really need God." Later on, another Jewish family came in. Both the fellows were managers in Johannesburg and Durban firms, and they were all broken up. One was, their father had a triple bypass surgery. The prognosis didn't look very good. So I just said, "Well," I said, "I've just been writing to my family in New Jersey, and I've just been enjoying a verse from Isaiah 41. It says, verse 10, 'Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you.'" I said, "Isn't that good?" They smiled. We had something in common. We put arms around one another. I just feel so inadequate to reach out to Jewish people. My wife's sister married someone who's Jewish, and they know better how to reach the Jews for the Lord. But out of my ignorance, the Lord just brought our paths together, and I just shared what Christ meant to me. Even at physiotherapy here in Philadelphia, the Lord gave a good 30 minutes speaking to a Jewish lady, a therapist, about the Lord, how Christ is the Messiah. But here in the intensive care, the Lord just used that to help me forget about my own hurts and reach out to others.
That's marvelous. Then it was pretty hard, you and your wife being down there and your children being home. And what developed on that?
Well, when we arrived in Johannesburg, I spoke to the doctor. I said, I know my wife is very ill and cannot travel for some time, but as soon as we can, we'd like to travel to the States to be with our family. Well, he says, don't count on it for quite a number of weeks. Well, I says, I'll wait word from you. So I went to a travel agent to see at least price the ticket. And when they told me the price of a round ticket from the States to Johannesburg and back, I kind of gasped because I multiplied it by four. And I thought, well, it's out the question. And I said, Lord, you work it out. Here in the States, the family were looking into travel arrangements, and they had, with their savings, managed to collect enough from their savings to for two of them to fly out. But the Lord wonderfully stepped in when they spoke about this. The Lord's people stepped in and said, we'd like to take care of that. And four tickets were purchased for the four of our children to fly out to be with their mother and father in South Africa.
What effect did that news have on Lois, that they were coming?
When I told her that they were coming, she was still somewhat in a semi-coma stage, but she nodded her head, and I knew she had taken it in. And from that day on, she really picked up.
Should mention at the time he was calling for the guarantee, that he was trying to get a hold of our office down there, but that was one of those bad storms we've had a few of this year, and we didn't have any power, so the telephone wasn't coming through, but they got a hold of Echoes of Service in England, and they made the guarantee and then called us the next day, and all those things were taken care of. So that was a rallying point, and then let's move on. You came home. Tell us what happened with Lois and your involvement.
Well, when, first of all, backing up a bit, when the Becky and Samuel arrived first, I drove to the airport in Johannesburg to pick them up and went directly to the intensive care. Lois responded, but I noticed in the days after she came out of the coma, each time our family would visit their mother, they'd come away in tears. And I asked Becky, what's the trouble? She doesn't recognize her. I said, hanging there. But she's in the Lord's hands. And the Lord is going to work this out. So when Joy and Martha arrived, Lois smiled, and there was a wonderful reunion in the intensive care. I just said, I want to thank you for what you both have been doing for my wife. A Zulu nurse said we couldn't do anything without pointing at heavenward. Without him. I said, do you know Christ as your Savior? She smiled. She beamed all over. I said, well, that's lovely to meet others in the family of the Lord. So it was good to see Lois come out of the coma after 5 days, and then 16 days from the time she went into the coma, she was discharged from the hospital. It was a very special Christmas we had there. But I was interested how God worked in that situation, because the doctor had suggested I, at Willie Harrison National Room, I had suggested I see a neurologist while in South Africa. So I went to see a neurologist there, and he said, I told him the symptoms, the dragging left leg, and also a limp. And the last day we flew from South Africa, my fingers were curling up so I couldn't use the computer. And the neurosurgeon said, you better give that attention right away. It appears your tumor is growing in again. So then we decided we'd have to get a reservation, but there was real problems there, but the Lord solved that, and we flew back to the States on the 17th.
And then just tell us a little bit about your experience since then, what you've been through.
Well, an engagement was made, or an appointment, with the neurologist who operated on me in Philadelphia 9 years ago, and it was to be about a week after, but my brother David in Yorkie was able to rearrange that so it could be, we could see him the day after we arrived in JFK. We brought him the MRI x-rays, And he says, yes, your tumor is definitely growing in. Another MRI was taken, and they figured that the tumor was the size of an orange. So someone said, well, was it sun-kissed? I've decided it is S-O-N, allowed of God, the Son of God allowed that tumor, and he gave us so many wonderful opportunities. Actually, if you're looking for opportunities to witness, I highly recommend neurosurgery. So a week later, I was operated on the 25th of December. I was just touched by the assembly in Johannesburg, who started a 24-hour vigil, prayer vigil for us from the time I went into surgery Monday morning at 8 o'clock. And different ones in the assembly were praying around the clock that everything would be okay. When you're thinking of a tumor the size of an orange, you think, well, would you have be able to be functional afterwards? Would you have your memory? Would your sight be impaired? All these thoughts go through your mind. But I must say the Lord just completely delivered us from anxiety, because a verse that was given to me 9 years ago with the neurosurgery there came back. Isaiah 26:3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. And I sank my teeth in it, and that took it through. So the surgery took place at 8 o'clock, and that evening I was speaking with the family, sipping water, and even witnessing to some of the people in intensive care there.
And then you've had to go back for some more tests.
Yes, I went back this week. They were thinking that they might have to do a second bout of surgery to get the remaining tumor out. The surgeon put it this way. He said we could go in and get the whole tumor out and say, well, we've got all the tumor, but you might not be functional. But he said we'd rather be cautious, which one appreciates. So they got most of it, but there is a part still left in there. So they were wondering about second surgery, and that gave us a little bit of concern. But the Lord worked that out when we visited the surgeon this week. He said what we have decided with the consultation with other neurosurgeons, that instead of second surgery, give it a heavy course of radiation and chemo so it doesn't recur. So I said, well, don't you use chemo with malignancy or cancer? He said, yes, but although the pathologist did label your tumor as basically benign, it is also a mixed glioma tumor, and we feel it's best to give it good treatment so it does not recur. So that is scheduled to start within a week or two.
Actually, they were thinking about starting it before today, but you told them you had an important engagement.
That's right.
Come here and start next week. So what about Lois? What prognosis or what checks have they made on her eye and her eyesight?
Lois's eyesight has been the biggest disappointment. We're just thankful to the Lord she's alive, because we knew it could have been different. Her memories come right back. I know I'm so glad she knows the right man to kiss. She can't recognize a person too well, about 6 feet. She has been reading the scriptures with a large magnifying glass, or double magnifying glass, by its power, and the doctor thought it'd be best to give it a healing time, and we have noticed a difference. In South Africa, she couldn't read any letters under 3 inches. Then it moved down to 2 inches, 1 inch, and now she's reading a large print Bible with 2 magnifying glasses. And this week when we saw the neuro-ophthalmologist, he suggested that she can now take a prescription. So we're looking to the Lord that this might enable her to read the scriptures again.
They declared her to be legally blind?
Yes, that is the declaration this week.
Will exercise help her the peripheral vision or anything like that?
We asked about that. The ophthalmologist said there's nothing we can do, but we know we can do something by prayer.
All right. Now, is there anything else you'd like to tell us just about the events before we come to the 2 big questions we want to ask you?
One thing I really appreciated about the whole experience is the opportunity the Lord gives when you're in situations like this. in the intensive care or the neurosurgery step-down unit, the nurse on night duty and the others, there were good opportunities to share Christ with them. And I found that as one nurse who's a Christian in the hospital, she said, we are somewhat limited. Working here, they're ready to pounce on you and say, well, now you're here to work and not to proselytize. Well, I said, that's one thing they don't, as a patient, I have the advantage over you. And she says, you surely do. So there were a lot of good opportunities to share the Lord with people. And I found that's one thing the High Court can't forbid you from witnessing when you're in bed. If they don't like you witnessing in the hospital, I guess they wouldn't exactly put you outside the hospital. They might consider giving you anesthesia. I don't know if the fact I was speaking to different ones there, to the staff and the patients, was the reason why they moved me out of intensive care 2 days later. But I just thank the Lord for the many, many wonderful opportunities to share Christ with the people in hospitals.
Well, just from all of this experience that you and the family have been through, and the people here at home have certainly been praying for you and will continue to do so, but just 2 aspects. What have you learned and what have you appreciated?
One thing I have, Lois and myself have not found ourselves asking the question, why? We've seen the answer already. When you are going through tears, trials, and trouble, it's a time to lean. It's learning to lean on the Lord. He gives so many wonderful opportunities to share Christ with others and to forget about yourself and reach out to others. For example, that situation in the waiting room in intensive care in South Africa. It was very therapeutic for my just to forget about myself and reach out to others who were hurting. And I think of that verse in 2 Corinthians 1, blessed be the God of all comfort, who comforteth us in all our tribulation, that we can reach out to others and comfort them. How? By the comfort wherewith we are comforted of God. And that's been a very rewarding aspect. 2, another thing I have tried to learn from it, tears, trouble, and trial are an opportunity to put into practice what we're told in Romans 12, consider him that endured, that to be wearied in your mind and faint. When we get our minds off ourselves and onto the Lord, it's very therapeutic. And 3, another thing we have felt has been helpful is acceptance of God's will. He makes no mistakes. His grace is always sufficient. I don't know how we could have managed this had it not been for your prayers. And I would not say, I thought it was hundreds. I believe thousands were praying for us. We feel really privileged to be in the family of God.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the experience, the things that you appreciate, the prayers of the Lord's people and all that? Or just you're just taking it day by day from here, I'm sure.
That's right. We find it hard to be here in one way. We're so happy to be with the family and have a chance to kind of have a thorough check out on this. But I think of Philip, who has moved from Samaria, a town or city area, where there was blessing, to the wilderness to speak to one person, one-to-one. Here the Lord moved us from a wilderness area where the Lord was blessing. That Sunday, just before we left, a large group trusted the Lord. And one feels so feels for them, because to have to leave them and then not having a shepherd, one feels for them. But the Lord took us to South Africa and here to the States to have opportunities to witness to others on a one-to-one basis. But I think one of the blessings I have seen is just thanking the Lord for being in the family of God. It's wonderful to, one person wrote us that, I've never met you, but we're praying for you. That touches your heart. People all around the world have written cards and letters, phone calls. It has really touched us. I just think of when I prayed with my son, Samuel, just before he went to the Cherno. He got caught in the big snow and only had 3 days home. I said, Samuel, you were taken out at breakfast today, and one of the elders is coming to have a little time with you. Now, learn something from that. Paul says to Timothy, that which you've heard of me, commit thou to faithful men, that they in turn can commit it to others. Don't just be a seat warmer. Be someone who will reach out to the needs of others and bring encouragement to them. And the other thing I've really appreciated is just the heritage we have. As one looks back, there's parents who brought us up in the things of the Lord. Now their grandchildren are serving the Lord also as missionaries. And this has been an opportunity to say, to God be the glory.
Certainly that's true, Bo. We really appreciate it. You are expressing appreciation to the Lord's people, and I'm sure the Lord's people are expressing appreciation to you for all that you have done for the Lord, you and your dear wife, and you've been an encouragement to us to see the way you and she have carried on in this, and we just pray that the Lord will continue to watch over you and bless you in the days ahead, and that he'll restore you to full health and strength, and we know you're going to go on witnessing. That young man that wrote from South Africa said, I never met Paul Logan before, but I can tell you he's an evangelist. He didn't miss any opportunities to talk about the Lord, and that's...
Thank you, John and Paul. We've heard two testimonies this morning, two different testimonies, but both of those testimonies we can say with the hymn writer, praise the Savior, ye who know him. Who can tell how much we owe him? Gladly let us render all we are and have. We have a couple of minutes. Now, we weren't going to sing a hymn, and I know George Sharp is way in the back, but we'll try to struggle through it without him. Let's sing that one verse of hymn number 7. We all know it, How Great Thou Art. And I'm sure after what we've heard this morning, that can be the testimony from each one of our hearts, praising God for his greatness. How great thou art.